Welcome to Positioning 365 Beyond Seating, presented to you by Ultimate Medical, the makers of Easy Stand and Zing Standers and ActivAid Bath Safety Equipment. I am Marianne Girardi, a clinical education specialist here at Ultimate Medical, a physical therapist and a Resonus certified ATP. I will be your host for today's discussion. My co-host today is Kristen Czat, also a clinical education specialist here at Ultimate Medical, a physical therapist, a board-certified neurologic clinical specialist, and a Resonus-certified ATP and SMS. Today we will be discussing using standing frames for individuals with neurological impairments in an acute rehab setting. Our guest today is Jason Roth. Jason graduated from Loma Linda University in 2011 with a master's in occupational therapy and completed his neurointegrative functional rehab and habilitation certification in 2012. He has worked at Ballad Rehab Hospital in San Bernardino, California as a primary outpatient OT for 9 years, as director of therapy services for 4 years. Jason's wife is also an OT and they have been married 21 years. He has two boys, aged 15 and 17, who he enjoys watching play water polo. The family lives in a 100-year-old orchard house that Jason maintains. Jason is a traumatic brain injury survivor, a pretty decent painter, and a mediocre cyclist. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you, Marianne. Glad to be here.
Jason, to start off, can you tell us a little bit about your practice?
Yes, so we are a 60-bed inpatient rehab facility, and we have on-site outpatients. Our primary diagnoses are stroke and complex ortho. We're CARF certified for stroke care. We also kind of have an unofficial specialty in bariatrics. We admit patients up to 600 pounds.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
And challenging.
So we do see a scattering of other diagnoses, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's. On the inpatient side, we see a number of Guillain-Barré and other neurological diagnoses, patients post-cancer treatment, and then, of course, a scattering of joint replacements and the like.
Very interesting. So, Jason, tell us a little bit about your neuro-IFRA certification and how does that influence your standing interventions that you use?
So, I had the unique opportunity as a relatively new grad, I was about a year into my practice, to become neuro-IFRA certified. I do have to disclose I've let that certification lapse, unfortunately, but neuro-IFRA really taught me the fundamentals and how to treat the whole person. And much of their program is centered around really bringing the patient to a state of alertness. They really emphasize that stroke is a brain injury. A patient with a stroke or other, neurological insult is typically someone who's a little cognitively impaired, if not just a little cognitively hazy. The most common side effect of any neurological insult is fatigue. And so knowing that fatigue is an issue, we want to get the patient into situations and physical positions that will facilitate alertness so that we can promote the most awareness of their bodies and the most participation that we can. And standing is an excellent way to facilitate that. So for myself as an occupational therapist, of course, the typical focus is the upper extremity. And so early in my practice, I was performing most of my interventions either with the patient either seated or supine, and doing what I knew to do for upper extremity range of motion and some initiation and weight bearing for proprioception. It was really a change of focus and a change of perspective to start incorporating other physical positions, not only seated, but performing the weight shifts that would be required for transitioning to a stand or or unweighting one hip to perform toileting, things like that. And then having the skill to facilitate a stand with someone who's hemiplegic and maintain that while working on upper extremity function.
Do you integrate standing into all of your treatment?
Specifically with stroke patients, if I can safely do so, it is absolutely part of my treatment plan to do as much of the intervention in standing as possible. We really do life on our feet. So unless it is unsafe for me to facilitate that stand, or the patient has a pre-existing condition where standing isn't a realistic focus, I'm going to look to have them in stand for as much of the intervention as possible, whether that be through me, you know, using my body to facilitate that stand, or getting the patient into a standing frame to facilitate a more long-term stand, or allow me to do more complex activity with their trunk and upper extremities.
Yes, so that's an area that I am really interested in as a clinician, and as I've gained kind of more experience throughout my clinical career, is really looking at who are we using different interventions for and why. So I'd love to dig into your clinical reasoning as to who are you using supported standing as part of your interventions for, and how are you clinically thinking through maybe what devices and matching that technology versus, you know, when do you stand them under your own power versus use other devices to help you to do that?
So we'll start with the simple one. Standing under my own power, I'm looking for a patient who's the same height as me or shorter, someone that I know I can, you know, physically manage that way with the length of their body. I'm also looking for someone who can at least assist maybe 50% with the effort of that stand. So they have a sound leg that they can reliably use to assist the standing process. So I really should only be facilitating the impaired side. If I'm doing more than that, then I can't safely move on to facilitating other movement. And while standing certainly has a place in ADLs and the occupational therapy scope, it by itself, I would say, is more in the PT realm of focus. So I want to make sure that I can add either an occupational or a preparatory activity toward an occupational function while the patient's in a stand. If I have a patient who's pretty low level, someone who standing in itself is going to be a challenge for them, then I'll go to a simple saddle stander. We have a couple of those in the facility. Just the saddle around the hips, and it just brings them straight forward. Not a lot of mobility in that. We get them, you know, fairly locked out. If it's someone who specifically needs proprioceptive input, maybe I'll put a phone book or yoga block under the affected side to really increase the amount of input they're receiving through that leg. Another standard that we have in that regard is we do have an easy stand that maybe I have someone who has significant spasticity, and I need to make sure that they're not going to move into a position where they're maybe doing damage to their joints, and I need a little more constrictive space, then that easy stand is excellent for that. Then I know that the feet are going to be planted in a neutral position. The knees are going to be held in a neutral position as we come into a stand or a partial stand, and that I get all the same benefits with. Ideally, I'm using those two modalities to strengthen them to a point where we can go to a less restrictive device, which my other go-to, and this will sound counterintuitive, is a Berihab mat. So the mat, it converts into a standing frame that can hold up to an 800-pound patient, but it turns out that it's a really functional device for typically sized and typically weighted patients, allowing them more freedom of mobility while also safely facilitating a stand. So I did happen to have a patient who is 6'8", and as a result of a gunshot wound, had high spasticity on one side and was very ataxic on the other. And so that Berryhab mat allowed me to safely stand him and work on some dynamic movement with him in a way that I initially couldn't do. We initially had to have him on the easy stand to maintain a static posture as he became strong enough to handle that. Then we could transition into that Berryhab mat, and he was able to begin to control his postural movements, to control his upper extremity movements in a way that made the idea of standing at home when he transitioned to outpatients a safe home exercise program. And so his next standing frame, so to speak, after that was the kitchen sink in our ADL apartment. We worked on blocked practice, just the transition from a wheelchair to standing at the kitchen sink, you know, initially requiring pretty maximal inhibition of his ataxia so that he didn't face plant into either the counter or the cupboards. But with practice, we were able to get him to a point where his brother could facilitate that. And that was when he really was able to get daily practice standing. So using, you know, the cupboard doors as the block for his knees and his upper extremities, holding his upper body in position, much in the same way that a saddle stander would.
Yes, very cool. Yeah, you can't see me, obviously, but I'm only 5'2" on a good day in my clinical practice. That always, especially on the more acute side of things, on that inpatient side, is sometimes the barrier of what can I physically do and how long can I maintain that within the necessary times for the dosing that I'm trying to hit with that client. So utilizing the right technology and the right devices to help me to maximize that for my clients is a huge decision maker in my clinical practice as well. And then I agree 100% that I love the aspect that you talk about with the alertness and the orientation. I was blessed to work with individuals with dual diagnoses of spinal cord injury and brain injury, and we would use supported standing devices in co-treatments with both occupational therapy and speech therapy to be able to work on cognitive tasks while in that upright position, you know, and emphasizing all of those things, the postural control, the strength, and maximizing cognitive ability and orientation. So I love the clinical reasoning and thought processes that you shared with us.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah, the connection with speech isn't something that I had thought about while preparing for this podcast, but definitely, we have had several other patients where we strategically schedule PT before speech to get them up in a standing frame, the patient up in a standing frame, so that we can facilitate feeding with alertness and with good body posture. It, for some patients, makes all the difference. You know, whether that treatment is someone who's barely conscious, you know, in a rounded position in a wheelchair, or up and alert and ready to participate in a standing frame.
Absolutely. The shoulder mechanics can really be optimized sometimes with the right positioning, and incorporating that, I can imagine, is very helpful for upper extremity tasks for ADLs and feeding and things like that.
Absolutely.
Jason, when you first started using standing as part of your treatment, what are the most memorable changes you saw and your results of treatment from when you were doing it supine or sitting?
Okay, so what really sold me on incorporating standing was all the things that I was missing, even with patients who appeared to be doing well in seated or supine, with some of my, what I would consider my better performing patients, you know, at a wheelchair level or at edge of mat level. When I started initiating standing sessions, what I would see with them is that they would go in a couple of different directions. Either standing would be so much of a postural demand to them that they completely lost control of that upper extremity. It became like we took this huge step back. And so realizing that for some people, that positional change really eliminated the benefit of all the therapy that we had been doing, made me realize that I needed to be working on two fronts with those types of individuals. Others who appeared to not be really making progress, you know, on a seated or supine level, we get them into stand, that alertness comes up, and we start to see new capacity that wasn't evident before. They get some weight bearing through the affected leg. And as a result of that affected side awareness, they can suddenly initiate movement in the affected shoulder or in some cases in the affected hand. And so not getting them into that position of alertness, that position where they're sort of forced to use the affected side, really never challenged them in a way that was meaningful in a seated or supine position. So then with that patient, I know I want to get into a standing position earlier so that we have the chance to initiate movement, habituate movement. And then it's the opposite of the patient who, when we stand, loses everything. Now we need to habituate it enough in standing so that when we sit, they don't lose it, right? In either case, we want to habituate that movement in whatever position they're in. And that kind of brings me back to the neuro-IFRA training. That is an essential part of their training, is that movement that we're promoting needs to be evident in all conditions of observation. And so just those two positions really give us a picture of how much the patient really has integrated and habituated the use of those movements.
Yes, absolutely. What are some of the more challenging cases that you have utilized supported standing and the outcomes in those? What's your toughest diagnosis that you can remember?
A lot of the challenge comes down to the patient's emotional state. That consistently is the issue, is are they going to have anxiety? You know, is the left neglect so significant that the only time that they're really aware of that side is when they're standing on it, and it's not an awareness of that promotes function in them. It's one that really consumes their attention and renders them unable to focus on anything else. So a patient who may be in a seated or supine position is relatively calm and participatory. You get them into a stand, and it's kind of this frantic need to grab a hold of you or of something else. It brings forth all of this emotional liability, things like that. Otherwise, there is the challenge also with patients who don't really have that postural awareness. So a patient can appear to have some trunk control in a seated position that really isn't functional when you get them into a stand. It's another one of those kind of aha moments of, oh, this is why we have so little upper extremity function, when the patient essentially can only complete, you know, a lateral shift toward their strong side, or they simply slump over. And if you're not exploring standing with them, if you're not exploring, you know, an unsupported upright position, you won't be aware of those factors. Mm-hmm. Or at least not as meaningfully. There's too many compensations that a patient can do in a seated position.
Yes, absolutely. Those early days, especially in individuals with stroke or brain injury, when they are nonverbal or very, very limited communication, being able to read, like you were discussing, you know, their responses, whether it's anxiety or emotional lability or just straight going off of vitals and looking at the vital responses when they can't communicate otherwise, you're looking at their eyes to see how they're responding. That is definitely a challenge, I think, unique to those early days in that recovery process during the standing. So that's a really great point that you bring up.
Absolutely.
And these patients that are more challenging, have you been able to find a way to work through to actually add standing, or do you just maintain at the seated level?
It varies. Sometimes it means I need to do more foundational mat work, maybe working on, you know, going through postural transitions with, you know, pelvic movements, making them more aware of that. occasionally. It's combining that in a standing position. So in particular, that taller patient did have pretty profound challenges in maintaining a neutral postural position. So part of the benefit of getting onto the Berryhab mat with him was that I could then get his upper extremities into a position where he wasn't able to assist with them, and really work on his ability to perform trunk rotation, to perform lateral flexion of his trunk in both directions, and really fine-tune his awareness of how to maintain his body in space.
And the ability to have the standing device provided a safe place, do you find that sometimes that decreases the anxiety?
Absolutely. Yeah, if the patient trusts the device, then absolutely. This whole world of interventions opens up to you when they know that even if they let go entirely, they're going to be held in place. When there's no chance to fail, they're much more willing to put in the work of developing that postural control and developing that coordination. The image that comes to mind is a number of patients where I've just done a simple basketball intervention, throwing a ball into, we have like a little freestanding net. And when they know that even if they totally lose it with that toss of the ball, worst case scenario, they end up in a standing position with their trunk kind of flexed forward, then we can get multiple reps in and there isn't all the emotion tied to that. You know, it's not a failure. It's just another set of the activity.
Right. I know sometimes when you first get someone who's had a stroke and is not significantly involved, but you try to stand them for the first time, and the anxiety, the panic, the grabbing for everything usually can facilitate accidents and someone getting hurt, where mm-hmm. whether it be you or the patient, where when you use a standing frame, at least it's kind of like a big seatbelt, big safety net that gives everybody the chance to experience the upright position without and reducing the risk for injury.
Definitely, definitely. And with all the research regarding stroke recovery pointing to increased repetition, increased dosing of, you know, the movements or the activities, for you to really be making a profound impact, a lot of times it's not reasonable for me to expect to be able to hold up, you know, a 180-pound man for 45 minutes while we practice this movement. I need another modality to make that happen so that we're both safe.
And successful.
Definitely.
Can you tell us about some of your greatest successes?
Greatest successes. So one that came to my mind that relatively a short time after, you know, starting to implement standing with my patients, I had a patient who had been in a coma for several months, not your, you know, your typical neurological presentation. She had just left upper extremity weakness, and then was just kind of generally weak elsewhere, as you would, you know, as you would imagine from being laid out in an LTAC for a couple of months. So we started with standing in a standing frame. That in itself was fatiguing to her. But the time in that standing frame allowed me to do some intervention with her arm that it was wild. We went in one session from her having about 30 degrees of shoulder flexion to a full 180 active.
Wow.
In the space of a session, which never happens. Right? So we repeated standing there. We started to challenge her to, in the saddle stander, we would bring back the saddle, but challenge her to maintain her stand, knowing that we could do that safely, have her work on the eccentric control back to the wheelchair. I want to say a month later, we were working on asymmetrical kneeling.
Wow.
And first at the kitchen counter and then at the bathtub. By the time that we had to discharge her, she was in a position where she could kneel at the bath and give her son a bath and get back up safely.
That must have been amazing for her, because the ability to care for your child is one of the biggest drives mothers have, or parents in general have. Was that a specific goal she had, or did you just come upon it?
That was so patient-driven. That was her objective. While she valued the family members that were coming in and taking care of her son, she really wanted to be the one, especially after months in a coma of not being there at all. She wanted to reestablish that bond. And her progress really brought her to the place where, you know, she wasn't quite to the point where she could do housework on her own, right? She had to do some compensatory movement to get up and down, but could do it safely, could pick up her son safely. But she certainly wasn't going to, you know, vacuum her whole house or things like that. She wasn't quite there yet. But at least in the part that was most meaningful to her, she was doing that independently.
I think that's so important when we're looking at designing programs, no matter what intervention we use for the patients, is that we really need to honor, recognize, and integrate their goals and enable them to meet their goals. And it just makes everything, you know, we have our own goals for people, but if they're not interested in it and it doesn't have value to them, they're not going to do anything.
Absolutely. And another patient, Guillain-Barré survivor, we never really got him to a point where his legs gained the strength that he needed to stand. But he recreationally had been a fisherman, and he did develop the trunk strength to reel a reel. So he was able to, with some simulated activity, we were able to get him casting in the standing frame. We were able to get him reeling back, some really fun therapy. So the standing frame allowed us to get away from the seat back of the wheelchair, from, you know, other obstacles to that, and work on the trunk control and the upper extremity strength that he needed. We were able to point him in the direction of some assistive devices that are specifically made for wheelchair-based fishing. So while he didn't get back to a place where he could return to work as a mechanic, that wasn't really in the cards for him, he was able to, at least for his leisure pursuits, get back to that.
That's cool. He could get some of his life back.
Definitely.
Jason, do you have anything else you want to add? Thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
No, thank you for having me. I feel like the conversation that we had when you presented for my staff really sparked in me the desire to make sure that my staff have that same understanding of the value of getting patients into standing, or all the benefits that we just spoke about. It really hit home that for me as a therapy director, it can't be something that I just know in the back of my head for when I, you know, happen to be on the floor. It really needs to be something that's communicated with my therapist so that they see the kind of outcomes that I saw and have the opportunities that I saw in the clinic. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. I think as therapists, we're all just starting to learn that standing is not just weight bearing. It's not the verticalization. I know there are studies being done in ICU to help with arousal and working on coming out of coma earlier. I think a lot of people think of it just as weight bearing, and not that it can be part of a practice, and especially part of an OT session.
Yes. Breaks that cliche of this is the PT's device.
And you talked about it functionally. We are a standing society. We've spent thousands of years going from quadruped up to standing. And it was originally done for a functional purpose. It was to be able to access food and things. Have you seen any strong emotional reactions from family or the patients when they get up and they're upright again for the first time?
Definitely. When we get to a point where they're standing in their own power, the emotion's not there when it's a device. But the family is not seeing that progression. Yeah, I think the family perception is a lot like the therapy perception, that it's kind of a passive activity when it's in a standing frame, right? We don't see the benefit taking place.
No, agreed. I want to thank everybody for joining us at Positioning 365 Beyond Seating. We had a great conversation with Jason Roth, an occupational therapist at Ballad Rehab in San Bernardino, California, talking about how to use supported standing devices as adjunct and part of your therapy for acute neuro patients. If you want additional information on the use of standards, please visit our website, www.ultimate.com, and look at the education. Thank you again. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.